The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
I want to address the people on the left here for a second, because I watch the news and people on the right are saying this dossier is you know, proof positive that everyone in the government is corrupt and we should go after them and stop all this Russia nonsense. Then I watch the news on the left and the left is saying, you see, there's absolutely nothing here. I don't even know why people are even looking into this. I don't think I don't think the press is actually representing the common American, both Democrat and Republican. I think the average American wants this nonsense to end, yes, but they really want to know, is our government corrupt? Now, if you happen to be on the left and you think this is nonsense, I just want to ask you a couple of questions and be honest with yourself. How would you react if a possibly corrupted FBI director with biased agents were manipulating investigation with partisan moles in the Justice Department and an overall threat of hostile foreign intelligence services? How would you react if the president were Obama? The one who was running for president was Obama. And George W. Bush, along with John McCain, were doing all of this. Imagine for a second that a dossier describing domestic terrorist ties to Barack Obama were leaked to the press. At first, most of the media outlets wouldn't want to touch it. But a lesser-known internet site pulls the trigger and opens the floodgates. Let's say it's the Drudge Report. And the Drudge Report, all of a sudden, shows domestic terrorist ties. Leaks and damaging information begin to drop almost daily. Then CNN publishes a photo with Obama and Louis Farrakhan. And the New York Times reveals that Obama had ties to domestic terrorist Bill Ayers. And Fox News plays sermons from Jeremiah Wright, seemingly on repeat, for a week straight. And everything appears to back up and corroborate the dossier. Now, that could have been done. A rumor begins to circulate that the FBI is now surveilling the Obama campaign. How the hell did they get in authorization to do that? NBC reports. The FBI director's wife received a campaign donation from John McCain. Rachel Maddow claims that the FBI is partisan and compromised. Later, we find out that two of the agents investigating Obama's ties to Bill Ayers and Farrakhan hate Obama and are on record saying, "We cannot let this man become president. They really want a McCain presidency." The pieces are starting to fall into place, but then the ultimate scandal drops. We find out that the dossier was actually opposition research paid for and directed by the Republican Party and the McCain campaign. Not only that, but they took that dossier to the Bush administration, and the Bush appointees in the Justice Department are getting hand-fed opposition research from family members that work at the firm that's compiling the dossier. And those compromised members of the DOJ and the FBI used that information to obtain a FISA warrant to spy on members of the Obama campaign. If you're on the left, how would you feel about that? Would you be okay with that? Because I don't think you would be. All of this is currently happening. But just imagine for a fraction, just a fraction of a second, what would have happened to Obama in 2008? The Democrats would have been forced out into the streets. It would have been mass chaos. And all of this could have happened. because there's enough evidence to look into Obama as there was to look into Trump. But the media considered one of these guys beyond reproach. The media considered one of these guys as friendly. He's going to be fine. And so they took pictures of Obama with Farrakhan, and they hid it, literally hid it. And the media wonders why. Americans just don't trust the press anymore.
It's Tuesday, February 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. I'm really glad you're here. I want to talk to you a little bit about the stock market. And first of all, hello, Stu. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm back.
Yes.
And very rough voice.
Yeah, very rough voice. It was almost like you may have been screaming for the last...
May have been four hours of continuous screaming just a couple days ago.
There was there's a great picture that you tweeted out of you and your son at the Super Bowl, which but Pat and I were surprised you took him.
I had to do it.
It made my night. We were rooting for you. We weren't even rooting for the Eagles. We were rooting for you. At home while we were watching the game, and then you tweeted that picture of you and your son, and it was the best.
I was thinking it could be another 30 years until the Eagles are in the Super Bowl again. I don't care. I have to have him at that game.
And there
it was
is.
Seriously one of the most amazing. I cannot express how perfect that was. I can't even express it. It was like the greatest thing
Hang
ever.
On just a second. Because of your son?
Or absolutely.
I mean, of course. That had to be the great... He will never... He's 6.5?
Yeah, 6.5.
He will never, ever forget it.
Yes. He better not after that weekend. But obviously, like, literally lifelong dream for the Eagles to win the Super Bowl. So I'm not going to, you know, downplay that. I mean, that is a really big deal to me. But, having him there... I can't even express it. It's like literally the peak of all. Oh my God, it was a mess.
Or the Eagles, or because you and your son were.
I mean, really, it's him. It's like, you know, you look at that thing and I put the scenario through my head so many times of taking him to his first game, and you know, going through that.
This is his first game,
his first ever football game.
Oh my
God. For anyone who is an Eagles fan, my son. 1-for-1 in games he's attended that were Super Bowl championships.
Wow.
That's a stat nobody else has, I think. But just watching him and he was so excited about it. And it was just like the great, I mean, like at one point with the first touchdown they scored, when Jeffrey scored the touchdown and the end zone was right in front of where we were sitting. And I was just, you know, I'm maniacal. I've lost all control. And I just picked him up and I gave him the biggest hug in the world. And he was squeezing so tight. I'll never forget how tight
so
he was squeezing in that hug. It was, it was just the greatest thing of all time. I feel like it's all downhill from here. I mean, the Dow dropped 1,100 points. I didn't even care. I mean, the whole country could fall apart at this point. I got what I needed.
There's nothing better.
You know?
There is nothing better.
Oh my God. So great. So great.
My son is... You know, he's 13 now, and he's still, you know, he's still, I come home, and he's like, Father! He runs up, and he gives me a big hug, and I mean, I just love it. There's nothing better than children. There's nothing that means more. There's nothing that changes your life more. It just gives your whole life meaning.
It really does. You know, you never think... You know, when you're younger, that would possibly all the talk about that, could it possibly make a difference? You know, I mean,
it only gets better.
It's incredible.
It only gets better. Every age they're in, I think, oh, this is the best.
The best.
And
yeah.
Then they grow and you're like, this is the best. Mm. And then they hit the teen years and you're like, I want to kill them.
that's another story for another show.
Let's leave it at a happy place there. All right, so let's talk about the stock market, because yesterday it plummeted. And why? There's a lot of different people that are saying why. Some people are saying that this is it. This is it. I don't think it is. I mean, I got accused last night on Facebook for saying, look, I was doing my homework and, you know, one of my economic advisors sent me this information. I pass it on to you. And I said in the post, I don't think this is it. I don't think this is the big crash. My gosh, the people went crazy, crazy on Facebook. How dare you say you've been calling for a crash forever? I'm not calling for a crash. I'm not saying this is it. People don't want to hear it right now. And I'll explain why. I read a great article. I think I sent it to you, Stu. I read a great article this morning about why that is. And it really makes sense. And I want to go over it because it explains what's happening to us right now. We just do not want to hear about a crash. And it's funny because those on the left, they're kind of like, yeah, this is it. I see the Trump thing is all. They want it now. Where before, they wouldn't listen to it.
And they were warning, don't talk down the economy.
Yeah, don't talk down the economy. That? Yeah. Don't be a fear monger. Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting fear monger stuff from the right. Okay, so no fear mongering here because I don't think this is it. Let me explain what I think is happening. I did in my predictions for this year, I did say that a melt up was happening, a melt up was coming. And what a melt up is a stock market that races. And I mean, does what it was doing, but I need to see that thing over 30, between 30 and 40. When the stock market starts to race up to the top, then I think we are in for a melt up as opposed to a melt down. Which this would kind of be, where the stocks just start to plummet and melt down and lose, you know, half their value. I don't think we're there. I think this is a natural correction. I think it's a needed correction, but I think there's some other things that are happening. So let me give you the three or four things that I think are happening. First of all, the idea that the economy is doing really well is scary to some. Okay, the economy is starting to move. We've pumped enough cash into the system. Now you have the tax cuts, and so the tax cuts are helping companies invest. They're going to spend. They're going to employ more people, which will drive salaries up because there will be more jobs. And so the companies know I'm going to have to pay more for the workers. I'm going to have to make more products, but I'm going to probably have to cut the price of the products because there's going to be more competition. And so my profit margin is going down. Well, we've just come off of Wall Street and these corporations having gigantic profit margins because they were making the same crap and they were selling it and they were making it with fewer people. And so they were just keeping all of that money. And most of that money was kept offshore. So now that money is coming back. Now they're paying people more. People are going to spend more. They're going to have to make more products. They're going to have to expand. And so the profit margin goes down. So that is completely understandable. That is normal and a good thing. If they were hiring and Wall Street didn't go down and ignored that their profit margin was going to shrink, that would be a problem. This is a natural correction. That's the first thing that is going on. The next thing that is going on involves the Fed and inflation. Because money is going to start moving, remember, it is the amount of money plus velocity of that money, how many times that dollar is being circulated and how many people are spending that same dollar. The velocity of money, which has been worse in the last 10 years than in the Great Depression. It's supply of money plus velocity equals inflation. So we have plenty of money for the average person now that's going to start flowing around. People are going to start feeling like I can spend money. That'll increase the velocity. That's too much money chasing too few goods. Inflation will go up. Inflation is bad for this reason. inflation means the Fed has to come in and reduce the interest rates. I mean, sorry, expand the interest rates to raise them up, because that's the way the Fed sucks excess money out of the market. Okay. So they'll raise the interest rates. Well, raising the interest rates in a good economy, one that is starting to just start to move, can be really damaging. Because when you raise the interest rates, that means small businesses, people who want to buy houses, they're like, oh my gosh, it's a lot more expensive now because the interest rate is up 5 points or 2 points. God forbid, 8 points, 10 points. If you raise interest rates, which we're going to have to at some point raise interest rates the way we did in the 1970s or 1980s with the early Ronald Reagan, that's at 19%. No business is going to be able to, no business is going to be able to get a loan and run their business with 19%. Who's going to buy a house at 19%?
I mean, that is cataclysmic to an economy. I mean, that was what was, you know, the only time we've really seen that is right at the beginning of Reagan post-Carter, as they exploded right before that election and then really exploded before
Correct.
The Reagan policies took hold.
Correct.
And then he turned the whole thing around, and that's when you had that great expansion.
Remember that here's another part of this. So you have the rising interest rates, which will tighten the economy. It will tighten the money that is flowing for people who need to take a loan out, okay? Not the average person who's spending it at the store, but the companies and the people who want to buy houses. It will tighten that money. There's also a concern from some that the Fed really doesn't like Donald Trump and his policies. And there is history to show that this has happened before. And I want to give that to you and the rest of the reasons why the stock market had a bad day and is probably going to have another bad day today. We'll do that in just a second. Okay, so what you're seeing in the market is interest rates going to go up. Another rate hike possibly in March, and then another one in June. And they're talking about a third one in December. Now, the market correction, that is coming from inflation concerns, which means it is really important to organize your finances so you can complete your new home purchase or your mortgage refinance sooner rather than later. If you have an adjustable loan, please refinance now. Lock the lower interest rates. Lock them in. It will save you in the long run a buttload of money. And now is the time to start shopping for loan programs and rates. And you can get started by calling the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. Salary-based means they're not getting bonuses. They're not getting anything from the banks. If, you know, sell our loan. Got to remember that. When you go to get a loan, they're selling it to you. They're not giving it to you. I hope the bank gives me the loan. They're selling it to you. So call American Financing now. The salary-based mortgage experts at 800-906-2440. They work for you. 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
There are three or four things that I want you to be aware of on why this why the stock market fell yesterday, and it's probably going to fall today. I don't think this is the big crash, but I want to go over all of the ins and outs. The first one, wages, business expansion, those things are going up, which means the company's profit margins are going down. That is a sign for investors to go, okay, they're not going to make as much money, so I'm not going to invest so much in them because their profit margins are going down. That's normal. The next thing, the rising interest rates. We are looking at 4 Fed hikes this year, plus the velocity of money, the amount of money that is going to be spent because you're getting a raise, you have a tax cut, the companies are repatriating about $2 trillion that they had offshore and bringing it back in. the Fed is going to want to raise the interest rates because they'll have to, because that much money, especially in the hands of the average working person, where they're spending it, it's going to be too much cash chasing too few goods, inflation. The Fed will raise the interest rates, and that's spooking the market. And I'll explain that. I'll explain the 1980s. And the only one that concerns me is reason number three. Wages, one, interest rates, two. The real concern is number three, and nobody's talking about it. We'll do that next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
It's the new year, and if you're like me, one of your resolutions is to get in shape. Every single year, it's the same resolution. It's 2018, and you know, you want to look good. Your house has the same resolution. Yes, inanimate objects have goals too. You can help your home look its best with Overstock. For years, Glenn has trusted Overstock to make his home and our studios in Dallas look great. My wife and I love Overstock as well. We use it all the time. It's our go-to when we need to furnish our home. Overstock is not a discount house with last year's leftovers. They have beautiful new furniture and decor, all at Overstock prices. For this week only, Overstock is having their double savings event. There are thousands of deals, up to 70% off, plus free shipping on orders over $45. Plus, when you use the offer code BECK, you'll get an additional 10% discount. It's Overstock's double savings event going on right now, only at Overstock.com. All things home, all for less. We love Overstock.com. You're going to love it too. Check it out, Overstock.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Dow is down currently about 300 points today. At one point, it was down 1,500 points yesterday. Largest numerical drop ever. But it was, you know, when you put it into context, it was about a 5% drop.
Yeah, not even within the top 20 or 25 days of
it was a correction.
Market. You
can't look at the number at this point because we're used to a Dow around 10,000, at least I was, you know, and not this. So you can no longer look at the number unless you realize, wait, but it's 25,000, the Dow. Mm-hmm. And so losing 1,500 points in 2008 would have been a lot different than yesterday.
Yeah, certainly notable, but it needs to be put in perspective.
Yeah, okay. So the first reason, we told you, good reason. Wages, business expansion means smaller profits for the companies. That's why the stock market is going down. Second reason, rising interest rates. Concerning. Concerning because I believe inflation, real inflation, is coming, and that's going to hit you hard. Money in the workers' hands means you're going to spend it, and that's good for the economy, bad for inflation. Also, on the inflation front, if stocks are volatile, and I don't want to get all technical, but the VIX is about volatility in the market, and it is, I think it was yesterday or this morning, it is at one of the highest peaks ever, meaning people are saying, this is unstable, this is really unstable, I have no idea where it's going to go. When you have big money wants something pretty stable. They don't want to, they would rather take a 6% investment that is really solid, I'm going to get 6%, than an 8% in the stock market if they think that they could end up with 3%. So what will happen is, as things become unstable, people move their money over to bonds, which are stable. Bonds have gone from 4% to now 6% in profit. And we're pretty much guaranteed we're going to get 6%. Great. Okay. I'll take that. As opposed to, geez, I don't know. I might lose 10% here in this. The other thing about the Fed and interest rates is, you're probably too young to remember this, Stu, but when Ronald Reagan got in, he had a real problem with the Fed. And he was talking about, you know, auditing the Fed and breaking up the Fed. And lo and behold, the Fed said, oh, 19% interest rates. Okay. As soon as Ronald Reagan, now, there are people on both sides that say that was coincidence. Some people say that was absolutely intended. I don't know what the truth is. But the Fed has the power to make a presidency or break a presidency. And when Ronald Reagan stopped talking about the Fed, the interest rates came down.
So theory being that they disliked Reagan so much that they actually jacked them up higher than they needed to be?
Yeah, they disliked what Ronald Reagan was saying about the Fed. And so they taught him a lesson. Really? Okay, we'll show you what pain is. Okay, that's the theory. There's a theory now that the Fed does not like Donald Trump. And so they are going to jack those interest rates. I personally think that this is normal. I've been saying this for 8 years. You have to jack the interest rates. You have to jack the interest rates. You've got too much money out in the system. This is going to be hyperinflation at some point. This is really bad. Nobody's ever recovered from this. I was saying that during the Obama administration until about the last 5 years where I said, you watch, a Republican will come in. And that's when they're going to start jacking the interest rates. And that's exactly what's happened. So we had a pass for the last 8 years, and you're not getting a pass this time. Interest rates are a big problem coming. The third one is what really bothers me, because it's longer term and it's institutional.
These are the three, would you call this the three threats right now?
These are the three reasons why we're having problems with the stock market right now. Okay, I do not think that this is the big one. And you know me, I am. The sky is falling. I just don't feel that. Now, I could be wrong. I'm always wrong on timing. But I just don't feel that this is something that we need to be concerned about. We need to watch because of the third one. First one, wages. Second one, rising interest rates. Those are normal. The third one is scarce capital. Now, what does that mean? Glenn, you just said that there's too much money. There's scarce capital for one reason that we've never seen before. And we have always known it, but for the last 20 years, about the last 20 years, we have ignored it. And that is our government spending. The government is looking to sell $1 trillion of bonds. Okay, they're borrowing $1 trillion of money this year. It's the largest ever. It's like a 84% increase. Can I ask you, who's going to buy $1 trillion of our bonds? Who's buying that? Remember, China sent out a warning. We're not buying your bonds anymore. And then they quickly said, we're fine. But they've dramatically slowed the amount of bonds that they're buying. So who's buying them? Japan? Look at the condition Japan is in. So we're borrowing $1 trillion. Well, what does that mean? That means there's $1 trillion that could be used by businesses that is going to be used by the federal government. That means they're sopping up $1 trillion worth of funding, which will hurt businesses. The United States government is now in competition for $1 trillion. Would you rather have the United States government have that $1 trillion so they could spend it, or businesses borrow that $1 trillion, which you're not on the hook for, and let them expand and hire new workers and create new stuff? I'd rather have the business have that $1 trillion than the government. I'd rather not be on the hook for another $1 trillion. Not me. I'd rather not have our children and grandchildren on the hook for another $1 trillion this year alone. Our federal debt is now at $22 trillion. It will be at least $23 trillion by the end of this year. If we don't get our federal spending in order, we do not make this corner. You cannot reduce taxes and increase spending. You cannot do it, especially after you have printed $4.6 trillion, something the world has never, ever, ever seen. All right. I know that last one was a little doom and gloom, but it's well, true.
It's something we've had a problem with for a very long time. But the idea here is that because essentially the government's competing, right? I mean, it's going to...
It's sopping up $1 trillion. There's only so much money out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in American dollars, there's $4.6 trillion. That's what we have. You want another $1 trillion. You're taking a quarter of that out, unless you print more. Taking a quarter of that out. Now, you can buy you can take the yen and you can say, I'm gonna buy that. But then they're taking $1 trillion that they could have invested, and they're investing in what? More bureaucratic nightmares? It's not creating anything.
I don't know if this is exactly the same thing, but you're reminding me of this scenario, which is like, for example, you decide you're going to open a gym in a community. And this seems like a realistic analogy, as I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so.
Glenn can open up a gym at any time, right?
Right.
And so you build
But my gym, kind of like bar is a gym.
Yes.
My gym is actually a bar.
Okay, so you open up bar, the gym.
Yes.
Or gym, the bar.
Yeah, gym, the bar.
Gym, the bar. But say you open a gym and mm-hmm. you put lots of nice features in it and you it's got a pool and it's got, a kid watching area mm-hmm. and it has all the cool upgrades, a little juice bar, all the things you want to put in there. And, you got to charge a hefty price for that. And you go through all of this and you invest all of your money in it, and you build the building and you do all these things and you sign up people. And then a year after you open it, the local government decides they're going to open a brand new rec center. And their rec center, of course, because they're just taking everybody's money, they dump a fortune into it. So it's more upgrades and better and cheaper. Because they've just stolen all the money.
Not exactly. Because
we don't understand that they're competing essentially with these businesses.
But they're competing for the money. So it's more like this. I open up my gym, which is actually a bar. So I can say I was at the gym all afternoon. So I open up my gym and I have all this great stuff. And money's starting to flow. I've got customers because they've got jobs. Or maybe in this case, it would be better if they didn't have jobs. But I have lots of customers. Things are going on. And I'm ready to expand. I'm ready to create more jobs. I'm ready to take my gym, which is actually a bar, and franchise it and put it in a whole bunch of other places, which will create all kinds of other jobs. And now comes the federal government, because there's only, let's say, one bank, because we have to talk about global scale here. There's one bank. Only one bank can really give me that kind of money. All right. I need to be able to expand mm-hmm. and I need that money. The federal government comes in and says, yeah, you know what? I'm the federal government and you want to invest in me. If the bank only has so much money, there's only so much money out there. And if the bank gives $1 trillion to them, they're not going to have the money to give to me. And so I'm having to compete, which will drive the interest rates up. Who's going to pay more? You pay more than the federal government? Who's going to pay more?
Right. So of course the federal government can pay whatever they want.
Yeah. So the federal government will take that money and they take that out of the system. Then I'm in with the actual gym and my gym, which is called a bar. We both need to expand, but the bank has fewer dollars left. The bank doesn't have the same amount of money. So this capital is scarce because the government took it out. And now I'm looking to expand. He's looking to expand. Jeez, we both could have done it. But now who's going to get it because the money is scarce? And how much are we going to pay for an interest rate?
Right. And of course, it's a battle you can't win because the prices are always going up. They're always going to pay more than you can.
Well, the Fed will just, I mean, the government will just take that money out of the system.
Yeah.
It'll just take it out.
I will say this. The main thing I'm getting out of this conversation is legitimately, we'll go into business together.
Yeah.
We launch a bar
calling the gym
and we make it look like a gym from the outside.
I'm telling you.
And then you go in shorts and then you go in the back and it's just a bar.
Exactly.
But the front
right.
has like weights and like we hire people to go out and like lift weights all day. So it looks like if your wife drives by, it looks like a gym and you're inside.
Honey, I was at the gym all night.
It's great. might not exactly work with some of your personally held beliefs.
No.
But I mean, what? You're not, what are you against working out?
I don't have to drink alcohol.
Right.
I am against working out. So I'm just going to go, honey, I didn't have a drop at the gym. January flew by. We are already 6 days now into February, and we are dedicated to making 2018 the best year ever. And with that comes stress. With that comes long hours. With trying your hardest comes a lack of sleep sometimes. You need the best mattress you can. The best mattress you can find is Casper. Casper mattress has a unique combination of the foams that provide the right pressure relief and comfort, so you're perfectly balanced. And thanks to the breathable material, you're guaranteed to sleep cool. Plus, the mattresses are built to last for years. I have a Casper mattress. I think I got it over the summer, and I have had the best sleep. I would never say this to you if it wasn't true. I've had the best night's sleep since I got my Casper mattress. I can't remember when it was, sometime in the summer, I think. I've had the best night's sleep I've had in probably 5-6 years. Try Casper for 100 nights in your own home, risk-free. They'll ship it to you in a compact little box. They'll ship it free. And if you don't love it, you don't have to put it back in that tiny little box. They'll come and pick it up and refund everything, no questions asked. So start the year off right. Get a great night's sleep. Get a great night's sleep by tomorrow night. Try yours for 100 nights in your own home. Free shipping, free returns, Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. Important to use the promo code Beck. You'll save $50 off select purchases. It is Casper.com, promo code Beck. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I want to explain one thing, and this is why the third point on my list of the reasons why the stock market took a nosedive yesterday and probably have a bad day again today. The reason why the third one is the most disturbing is because it has universal consequences for all of us. We're borrowing $1 trillion. Now, I want to break this down into your life. Let's say there's some friend of yours that has always been really successful and always good for it, and you've loaned them an awful lot of money for their business. Now they're starting to become reckless and everything else, but you've got so much money into it, and you're saying, he comes to you and says, hey, you know, I've got to borrow some more money. And you're like, dude, I don't have much more money. Well, if I go under, I can't pay you back. Okay. Now imagine the conversation that you have with your wife. Honey, he's going under. We've got to give him more money. I don't know if this is good, honey. Yeah, I know, but if we don't, we're going to really lose an awful lot. We got to keep him afloat. So you have that conversation. You give him one or two more loans, and then he comes home and he's got a brand new car and he's bragging about it. And you're like, dude, what are you doing? Why are you having a new car? Spend that on what? I'm at stake too. And he comes to you and says, speaking of that, I need some more money. You have an argument with your wife. Honey, we're going to lose everything if he loses. He keeps spending money like on stupid stuff. That's America and the rest of the world. They're loaning us this money to keep themselves afloat as well. Because if we go down, the entire world goes down. How happy are you with your friend when he spent himself with all of your money into oblivion and you're both broke?
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Climate change isn't just bad for the environment, it is bad now for the womb. Yesterday, the New York Times ran a story highlighting women who claim their decision to have children is directly influenced by climate change. They had an example of a woman named Sarah. She considered having another child, but that would mean moving into a bigger house. And that's further from her job. She's not sure she can justify the environmental impact for a larger home and a longer commute. Allison, she was in the Times. She's concerned about the apocalyptic future of extreme weather. She said, I don't want to give birth to a kid and wonder if he's going to live in some sort of Mad Max dystopia. Miriam shared her concern. My instinct now is to shield my children from the horrors of the future by not bringing them into the world. Amanda actually decided to have more children because of climate change. Her reason? Someday my husband and I will be gone. If my daughter has to face the end of the world as we know it, I want her to have a brother there. Oh my gosh. You want to talk about fear-mongering? So many women are bringing climate change into their reproduction decisions that the organization Conceivable Future was founded to help women make environmentally friendly reproductive decisions and navigate our doomed world. Not to bring a child into the world because you're scared they are going to increase your carbon footprint or that they'll live like moody drifters in a desert-like terrain is the very definition of insanity. These women are deciding not to have children based on their fictional perception of their children's quality of life. And we're the fearmongers? The disgusting lie of an impending environmental wasteland and an overpopulated planet wasn't true in the 1970s. It wasn't true in the 1960s when it really started to take root and everybody was freaking out in the mid-70s. It wasn't true. It wasn't true that we were going into an ice age and that we would all freeze to death and there would be no food by 1990. That wasn't true in the 70s and the 80s, and it's not true today. This is nonsense. Stop it. We have to be better stewards of our planet. Yes, we should recycle. We should use less. We should make sure that the things that we do use, we can reuse. But to not have children? The birth rate in the United States reached its lowest point in 2016, and the decline continues all around the world. It is almost criminal that these women have been scared so deeply that they are allowing a 50-year-old unsubstantiated fear dictate whether or not they bring human life into the world. You know, let me give you a few things to be afraid of. How about this? Women, if you are afraid of this, let me give you something to be scared of. AI. We right now have scientists, credible scientists, Stephen Hawking. Some of the scientists that you believe global warming is true because of it, they say that global warming is nothing compared to AI. They say AI will wipe out the entire human race in the next 30 to 50 years, long before carbon is killing the planet, long before. Ay, ay, ay. Why don't you listen to them, but you listen to these? And here's an idea. Balance. Balance in your life. There are some days when I read stuff like this, I hope I'm one of the first that a robot replaces.
It's Tuesday, February 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to talk a little bit about balance again today. Yesterday, I talked about balance, the balance between self-worth and humility. It's a balance we can never get. If we're on top of the world, if we are doing great, I did it. Man, look at me. Our actions scream, look at me, I did it. And if we're having a bad go of it, I'm just stupid. I'm the worst. I can't believe it. I mean, I never catch a break. I'm just always make the wrong decisions. Oh, man. Humility and self-worth. Where do we get that? Yesterday, Sarah, I don't know if we still have the Martin Luther King commercial that Dodge ran, but there was a commercial that is, the people are actually calling for the firing of the person who came up with this commercial. This commercial was brilliant. Did it sell a truck? I don't know. Did it go too far by comparing Martin Luther King and his mission to a truck? Yes, definitely, definitely. Was this commercial good? Yeah, I think it was. It was based on a sermon that Martin Luther King did 50 years ago to the day on Super Bowl Sunday. And here's what he had to say.
You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know the theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics in physics to serve. You only need a heart full of grace. Soul generated by love.
Oh my gosh, they should be fired. Or maybe perhaps this is exactly the message America needs. What is a heart full of grace? What is that? That is a heart, I believe, that is balanced between self-worth and humility. I'm not going to change the world. I'm not going to change anybody's life. I'm just trying to do the right thing. I'm just trying to change my life. I'm trying to be a better person. And I know I can do it because I know who I am. And because I know who I am, I know who you are. And I know how we're connected. And so I'm going to serve you. I'm going to help you because that helps me. It helps all of us. That's what we're here for. That's a heart full of grace. Yesterday, I brought you this message. And right before I went off the air, I received this phone call. Let's go to Minnesota and Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Mr. Beck. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you? Thanks for holding.
You bet. Hey, I just wanted to say, I wanted to preface this with, I'm at work and I don't listen to you very often. And I think it's a bit of serendipity that I happened to listen to you a while ago. The first thing I heard was MLK saying something about having a heart full of grace.
Yeah.
And then you talked about being honest with yourself. And you went on that line for quite some time. I served our country in the 2nd of the 75th Ranger Regiment. And I've been honest with myself ever since I got out. I've hated myself. I've despised myself. And I'm a husband and I'm a father. And what you said, you know, it's hard for people to reach me at a certain level because I don't want people to. Because I like to keep people away from me, except for my wife and my daughter. I'm not a huge people person. I don't like people, and I think it's because I don't like myself. I've never really had an epiphany moment in my life. I certainly never expected one from Glenn Beck. But that's what happened. I had to pull my truck over, and it moved me to tears to realize how much I can't stand myself and how much of an issue I have being the kind of person that I need to be to guide my family. And all because of the fact that I don't serve anymore and I feel useless. I feel emasculated and I have no idea how I got to this point today. I have no idea why I'm at this point right now, because I certainly didn't expect it. And I certainly didn't expect it at the time that it happened. But I'm glad that it did.
Brian,
I just wanted to let you know that.
I just have to tell you, you're not alone, brother. And I have been in exactly your place. I've been there. And it gets better. It really does. You just, now that you've recognized it, now you can start taking baby steps. And a year from now, you won't recognize how great your life is. So that was,
thanks for calling.
That was yesterday's program at the very end of the program. And I was struck by, I hate myself. I despise myself. Because I used to feel that way too. I don't know if Brian is a drinker, but that's the way I dealt with it. And I used to hate people. I used to say that all the time. I hate people. They don't. I hated me. They hated me. I was a self-hating egomaniac. That's who we've become. We are filled with certitude that we know exactly what's happening. We know exactly what the problem is. We do this in it's so strange. We do this in politics. We know our side is right. Their side is wrong. We know it. And there's no room for gray. But I'm sorry to say, principles are principles. They are black and white. But how we're getting to those principles, how we're understanding those principles, there's a lot of gray. Their side is not always wrong, and we're not always right. In fact, we seem to switch places an awful lot. Brian says he feels useless and emasculated. I fear there's going to be more of that before there's less. But the good news is, if you recognize it now, you can take the steps to change that course. And it's really hard, but it's so well worth it. My father taught me the most important thing anybody's ever taught me in my life. The most powerful words in any language is I am. You change what follows those two words and you will change your life. I can guarantee you that he spends a lot of time as I did. I am useless. I am worthless. I am so weak. I am so pathetic. Well, if you had somebody around you saying that all day long, for months and months and months, perhaps years, it would affect you, and we would call it mental abuse. We say those things to ourselves much more than anybody else could possibly say that. We're inflicting mental abuse on ourselves, and we believe it. After a while, you believe it. Do yourself a favor. Get out a notebook and a pencil and just put positive and negative, one side positive, one side negative. Don't judge anything. Don't ponder it. Just when you have a thought, oh, I'm so tired. I'm so worthless. Oh my gosh, I'm so, whatever it is, I am. Just notice, is it positive or negative? Then just mark it down. When I did this years ago, I don't think I had any positives on. In the worst times of my life, I have fewer positives than negatives. Your job is to stop using, in my opinion, the name of God is I am. Who shall I say sent me, said Moses. I am that I am. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. What he means by that is my creative power is in my name. And I am will create whatever it is. Don't take it in vain. Don't take that lightly. I am strong. I am stronger today than I was yesterday. I am better today than I was yesterday. I am discovering my worth every second. You can't just convince yourself that you are worthy. I'm discovering my worth every day. I am finding new things to be excited about every day. Believe me, you change your thinking and you will change your life. Oh, and by the way, for anybody who thought that the guy should be fired for that Dodge Ram commercial, maybe Dodge could say that because I don't think Brian is going to be out buying a Dodge because of the commercial. But because of that commercial, and because we weren't bitching about it on the air, but actually talking about it, it changed one man's life. Good job, Dodge. I want to talk to you about Simply Safe. SimpliSafe is this great company full of just really, really great people. And what they've done is they started out just as helping friends, and they realized, holy cow, my friends love this. And now all of a sudden everybody's talking about it. They were at school, they were in Cambridge, and it was Chad that was, he's a tinkerer. He comes from a tinkerer's family. His grandfather invented, I can't remember for the life of me what it was, but something really important in our tanks that actually helped us win World War II. And so he had some pretty big shoes to step into. And so he's always, been tinkering with things. He's an inventor. Friends came to him and said, hey, listen, we can't have a wireless system in our house. We're getting robbed, this whole neighborhood, because we don't own them. We're renters because we're going to school. And we need something affordable. Can you come up with something? So he came up with what is now known as SimpliSafe. It was a real crude, rudimentary security system, but it worked. And then everybody in the neighborhood was like, can you get one of those for me? And that's when he realized, holy cow, I have something that is revolutionary. It's SimpliSafe. They've revolutionized it again. They now have a brand new system that is completely rebuilt and redesigned. They've added new safeguards because it's wireless. It'll protect you against power outages, down Wi-Fi, cut landlines. They've taken hammers and bats to it. They've done everything they can to stop the system from working, and they can't get it to stop working. It's the all-new, completely redesigned SimpliSafe at the same price per month, $14.99 for the 24/7 protection that you will get with SimpliSafe. You own the system. There are no wires, and without a contract, there's no strings attached. Supply is limited. Go to SimpliSafeBeck.com to order right now. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Stu's back from his beloved Eagles win, which we were rooting for the Eagles, Stu, just for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. Go Birds.
Yeah. Okay, enough.
Okay. I have a love story I wanted to tell you about.
Oh, a love story. That's okay. Very nice. This is good. All right. All right.
It was a long time ago, about 25 years ago.
25 years ago.
Two crayfish.
Two, pardon me?
Two crayfish.
Yes, okay.
They met. And they, it went fast.
Uh-huh.
You know, things moved pretty fast.
Yes.
It was not one of those.
It was love at first sight. It was just sex.
They went at it.
Yes, right.
Okay. There was an issue, however.
Uh-oh.
One of them had a mutation in a sex cell.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
In a sex cell.
Yes. Whether it was the egg or the sperm, the scientists don't know yet.
Don't know.
As they analyze this love story.
Oh, boy.
Now, normal sex cells contain a single copy of each chromosome, but the mutant crayfish cell had two.
Uh-oh.
Somehow the two sex cells fused and produced a female crayfish embryo with three copies of each chromosome instead of the normal two. Somehow, too, the crayfish didn't suffer any deformities because of this, which was normally what would happen.
I want to know, is there extra meat?
Yes, it's actually these crayfish are very large.
Really?
And they produce a lot of eggs. And what's interesting about these new crayfish that happened on this
day,
this love story that paid off 25 years ago, just 25 years ago, is they can now clone themselves. They do not need to have sex anymore. They are all females, and the females have eggs without having sex, hundreds of them, and they just keep repeating and repeating and repeating and repeating this process. So they have now cloned to... taking
this
over.
Is like Gloria Steinem's worst nightmare and greatest dream. I officially don't need a man, but the overpopulation will be crazy.
That's true. They are now, the New York Times says they're taking over Europe. There's millions and they can't stop it because they just keep cloning themselves with the hundreds.
Was it man created or was this natural?
Natural. It happens.
It's evolution. Mm-hmm. It's evolution, people.
Glenn Beck Mercury.
Every once in a while, one of those products crosses the line from product name to just the thing that we call the product. It's like, Kleenex, instead of tissues, it just became Kleenex. Everyone called it Kleenex. TiVo was like that. The DVR was just a TiVo for a long time. Now it's DVR. Well, Q-tips are like that. When you think about cleaning your ears, like, it's just Q-tips. That's not necessarily what they're called. That's the brand name. And, you know, you think, okay, well, this is something we all have and we all use, and it's got to be the best way to do it. Well, actually, not at all. It's not even designed to clean your ears. That's not what a Q-tip is supposed to do. Look at the box. They got a bunch of uses for it. They don't say stick one of these way down in the middle of your ear. That's not what they're recommending. WaxRx, they are recommending you use WaxRx to clean your ears because that's what it's for. The WaxRx system is the method physicians trust the most, and it's just like the system they use in their offices. Basically, the WaxRx system has these wax softening drops that break down ear wax inside the ear. It's not something that people want to talk about, but again, you're doing this at your house, and you want to make sure that it's actually done the right way. Go to usewaxrx.com. and order your reusable ear wash system today and use the offer code radio, and they're going to ship it free right to your door. The promo code gets you the free standard shipping. Give it a shot. Use waxrx.com. Promo code radio. It's usewaxrx.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome back to the program. You know, we were just talking about these crayfish that... have mutated, and now they can have babies without having a male. The women self-fertilize the eggs, and they're taking over Europe. I see this as a movie, a bad 1950s B movie.
They're cloning themselves, literally cloning, genetically cloning themselves, and they I guess they became popular like by people who, aquarium hobbyists in the 1990s. And they, because they were bigger than the normal ones and they produced lots of eggs, so you'd get lots of extras. And they kept producing so many extras, people started freaking out and just bringing them to local lakes and just dumping them in the lakes, the extras. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, obviously, free to roam. They're very resilient, free to roam. They're able to produce more and more and more and more. And now they're all over the world. No one knows how to get rid of them or what to do about them.
It's honestly like the, is it the rabbit population in Australia? Do you know that? I think it's rabbits, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I know one phrase about rabbits that works into this story.
No, I know, but I mean, there was I can't remember how this worked, but somebody brought over, I think it was rabbits to Australia, and there was the natural predators were not strong enough, and the rabbit population went crazy and overrun, I think it's Australia, with rabbits. And it was a real problem over in Australia, because people, you know, there's... bring all the cute little bunny and they bring it over. Then, you know, I don't know about the cute little crawfish, but, you know, you're taking it out of its natural habitat and you're just starting to dump it, and it doesn't have necessarily any predators. And in this case, it's genetically cloning itself.
Is that the one where there's like a whole island where it's just like covered in...
I don't know. It might be a book that I read to my kids at night. I don't know.
It's interesting, though, that they say that about one out of every 10,000 species this occurs with. There's some mutation. And then the woman, the lovely woman,
the
crop person is very much says me too and doesn't want to be with the men anymore.
Right.
And then she starts having her own clone babies. And I guess it's you know, relatively common.
Well, wait, out of one out of every 10,000, how come we haven't been overrun by... whatever it is.
We sadly think the same way. Because I was reading the whole article, like, wait a minute. We're going to have like 9 feet of crawfish in 2 weeks. That
right.
was the way I was ending this. Apparently, they're...
it's Moore's Law.
Right. Apparently, they have a very strange life cycle, these species. Because they launch, mm-hmm. and they, like, legitimately, they don't know exactly what happened. But about 25 years ago, this is a brand new species. Mm. And it launched, and it has this huge run where they multiply like crazy. And then they all sort of die out at once. And what they believe is, because they're genetic clones, they're affected by the same things. So when a disease hits one, it hits all of them at once and wipes them all out.
That's what happens to the Aztecs.
It's what happens in every horror, space horror movie.
It is.
Every sci-fi film. I mean, War of the Worlds, right?
Yeah, H.G. Wells. I think he was the first to do it, where it was the common cold that killed the aliens.
And just, spoiler alert. In case you happen to be in the world of
H.G. Wells.
But yeah, that's what happens. It's kind of crazy. And, you know, so it's a...
So you're saying that diversity is a good thing. So
yes.
Right? That's what you're saying?
I am.
So...
even around prey people.
Around prey people.
Prey people.
Crawfish are people too.
They are.
That's it. That's interesting, because you would think that maybe we would actually celebrate diversity instead of saying we celebrate diversity. We would actually, what's crazy about this is, I guarantee you, when they start to die out, it will be blamed on whoever, the polluters, the planet, or whatever. They will completely dismiss whoever that this happens all the time, and they will start a save the crayfish or crawfish, fund. Mm-hmm. And we will have to save, and people will pour money, and they'll say it's the worst thing ever, and look at what we're doing to these poor crawfish. These were unique crawfish, and they'll spend billions of dollars trying to save them.
Yeah, probably.
When it's kind of natural. But anyway, speaking of natural, I think it's only natural to have this conversation in a press meeting. This is a little hopeful moment from Canada with Prime Minister Trudeau yesterday. Listen.
We came here today to ask you to also look into the policies that religious charitable organizations have in our legislation so that it can also be changed, because maternal love is the love that's going to change the future of mankind. So we'd like you to look.
We like to say people kind, not necessarily mankind, because it's more inclusive.
There we go. Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
We can all learn from each other.
Yay. Isn't that hopeful? Canada's gone completely over the edge.
That is awful.
Oh, my gosh. And the crowd cheers. And listen to what she's talking about. Hey, will you check into the tax deductions of religious organizations? I mean, that, you know, it should be treated fairly. So it's an anti-religion question. Mm-hmm. And he corrects with person kind, not mankind. Oh my gosh.
Like, that's one of the most irritating clips of audio I've ever heard. Come on.
Really?
Why, honestly, can that be? How
it
can
makes
it possibly
me want to eat detergent
focus?
Pods.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I listen to that, I'm like, I don't know, I'm going to give Tide a try.
My insides will be very clean.
Very clean. Mm-hmm. Very, very clean. Mm-hmm. I can't take it.
That's unbelievable. How can we possibly be at a point where we take things that way? You're just searching for outrage there, right? Searching for it.
What are you talking about? No.
No?
No, that's just the truth.
You're looking for any way you can possibly find to keep yourself awake. Through outrage. It's not even like it's not even people hear something and they get angry at it anymore. It's people searching constantly to find a way to make themselves angry.
No. Here's Senator Gillibrand. She said, I think a lot of President Trump's rhetoric is racist. I think we've all learned what happens when people, claim the president is racist.
Oh, it's very bad. You
very
should
bad.
Not do that. We know one thing I know.
One
is you
thing
should
I
not,
learned.
No.
Do not question.
Not okay.
That is, that's an insult to the presidency, the office of the president. People who do that owe not only the president, but owe the entire country, if not the world. I heard that one in South America. If not the world, you owe him and them all. Person kind, an apology.
It seemed like you got a little specific there rather
than
the general.
I don't
know.
I was just thinking about how much I enjoyed my trip and my interview with South African television. Anyway, mm-hmm. She made the remark and she said, when you use the phrase chained migration, it is intentional in trying to demonize. Literally, I'm still quoting, literally demonize families and make it into a racist slur. That's not right. We have to change the debate. These are people. These are families.
So literally demonizing would be trying to turn them into a demon. So what part of that statement, the word chain is a literal way to describe a demon?
Of course, you want to demonize these people. You want to demons are obviously slaves.
You follow it, and I certainly don't think she follows it.
Okay, how about this one, Elizabeth Warren, 2020, right around the corner.
It is.
What are we going to do with Elizabeth Warren, Chief Howpow? What are we going to do?
I don't know. I mean, she needs to be protected as she's a protected.
Exactly
tribe.
Right. Mm-hmm. She has listed herself as a Native American. She claims that she was a minority in the legal directory of the Association of American Law Schools. She's listed as a Native American in federal forms at Harvard and the University of Pennsylvania. She contributed to the Native American cookbook, which is not insulting at all to call it powwow chow.
Ugh.
She has
okay. Trudeau was just beat by powwow chow for the most annoying thing I've ever heard.
No, powwow chow. There's nothing humiliating or degrading about that at all. No,
not at all.
Okay. She has also listed her name as Elizabeth Warren Cherokee in powwow chow. Okay. But for some reason, she has not officially reported her Native American ethnicity to the Senate's historian office. I mean, you'd think that would be important, the first Cherokee.
Just a whoopsie?
Yeah, I think it is. Think? I think okay. it is. Mm-hmm. Oh, either that or she isn't really a Native American.
Oh, okay.
One of the, she's the whitest white person ever. That could be one of the things. She claims her family ties go back to Oklahoma before it was a state. She said she always grew up hearing tales from her mother's side of the family that, that they had Cherokee and Delaware blood in them. Can I tell you something? I also heard my grandfather tell tales that, you know, we were related to, you know, kings and queens over in Europe. No, no, we weren't. We're nobodies. We're nobodies. You don't listen to the tales and then take that to the school and say, yep, you got to call. I'm royalty.
Yeah.
No,
no.
And she's not a Native American. Thorough examination by genealogists has proved that she is not Native America. Native American. They pored over her family's birth, marriage, and death records and couldn't find any proof that she has any Native American in her.
And wasn't her answer to that basically like, oh, well, I didn't mean like blood. I meant like my heritage was Native American. Like I made recipes that were related to powwow chow. You know, wasn't that her kind of answer to that? She didn't fully did.
Oh, she's identifying as a Native American.
Kind of, right?
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
That situation.
Yeah. So the question is, can anybody just claim to be what they want and expect everybody to go along with it? No. No. The Democrats are freaking out a little bit on what do we do with her Native American heritage if she decides to run in 2020? I say embrace it. I say put her in a full headdress and she comes out with a peace pipe and she just embraces it all.
Some people might find that offensive. However, it couldn't possibly be as offensive as powwow chow.
It would be offensive. It would be offensive if I did it, but not if she did it because she's Native American.
No, she's not.
Just no, you don't get into powwow chow for nothing.
Yeah, right? I'm sure.
You think?
You probably do get in for nothing, yeah.
By the way, the UK is all over. They have a government watchdog group now. Just to let you know, they want you to stop using the words Islamic terrorism because it doesn't exist.
Oh, good.
Oh, and by the way, in Poland, they have they've just banned the references to the Holocaust era. They have banned the phrase Polish death camps because Polish death camps didn't exist.
Wait, is that just Poland defending Poland? Like it wasn't, we didn't do it. Stop saying it was ours.
Yes.
I can kind of, that's kind of like Monica Lewinsky, who's lately been pushing back, saying, stop calling it the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Now, of course, she was involved in it, but it wasn't just her. There was a guy involved in it, too. I don't know if anyone remembers.
We're going to change that part, sweetheart. Did I just call her sweetheart?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
That's unbelievable. And then right after, by the way, I don't know if anyone's pulled this audio, he said powwow chow on the air. Did you hear that?
All right, with the Dow down over 1,000 points in the past few trading days, it is worth noting that gold is actually slightly up. Gold is doing exactly what it is supposed to do when the market gets volatile. This is why I buy gold as an insurance policy. An insurance policy that goes against the craziness of everything that is going on in the world. It made me laugh. People say, oh, yeah, gold. It's so bad. And so really? I haven't noticed it. I think I bought it at maybe $300 an ounce. And it's, what is it now? $1,500 an ounce? I'm pretty comfortable with that. And I don't buy it as an investment. I buy it as an insurance policy because gold has been a safe haven for centuries and it performs well in times of inflation and volatility. What is the market freaking out about? Inflation, which is making it volatile. Ta-da! Goldline, now under new ownership with better pricing, but the same great service, the same great people that are there. They're waiting for your phone call now. Read their important risk information and find out if gold or silver is right for you. Call 866-GOLDLINE. That's 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So how are you feeling about your cryptocurrency there, Stu?
Everything's going well. Sunny skies. That was another thing. As the Eagles were winning the Super Bowl, the cryptocurrency market was further crashing, and I didn't care.
What is it at today?
It's around 7,000.
It was like 6,500 this morning.
Yeah, so it's
down
up
from
a little
19.
Bit today.
Yeah,
peaked at 19,000. I mean, again, it's up immensely for over the past year. And I think I was reading the other day that we're back to December 6th levels.
This last December?
December 6th, which is 2 months ago.
We thought was crazy.
It was crazy at the time as far as gains, you know? It was such a crazy run. And you know, who knows what's going to happen? It could crash further. It could go back up. I mean, God only knows. I mean, obviously you're in this for the long term if you believe in it. Or, you know, if you have made some profits, you can always take some off the table.
All I can think of is Malcolm Gladwell, but it's not Malcolm Gladwell. It's the other guy who's cryptocurrency. He's been on the show before. Mm-hmm. He's Silicon Valley guy.
Altshuler.
Yeah. He's coming on because I've been writing him going, James. And he's a big crypto guy, big Bitcoin guy. And he says, it's fine.
A lot of people are still predicting the big things, and who knows what's going to happen with it. I will say today there's testimony going on in the United States about whether there's going to be regulation. They're starting to talk about
that. Can I ask you a question? Why hasn't the United States come out with the bit dollar?
Well, they're not exactly quick to innovate.
No, I know, I mean, why isn't somebody, I mean, we're not even talking about, China is.
Yeah, Russia was talking about it.
Yeah, why are we even talking about that?
I don't know. Do you want a cryptocurrency, though, backed by your U.S. government? What's the point of it?
No,
you already have that.
I don't.
Right. I'm surprised, because it's also a way for them to make a lot of money.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm thinking just as the evil Fed here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Get into the market, control the market. You know, we have all the levers. We could control everything. And then we can say, no, you know, Bitcoin, that's unsafe. That's for drug lords. And they'd make a lot of money. I don't understand why we're not doing that.
Also, incredible visibility on your financial transactions if they controlled it.
I'm really happy that they're not. Yeah, right. Don't get me wrong, but I can't figure out why we're not talking about it.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 1,175 points. Today, it's down right now about 10 points. It was the largest single-day point drop on record, but that doesn't really mean anything because, you know, the Dow is at 25,000. The performance came on the heels of the Dow falling 665.75, not 666 on Friday. You can round it up, but that's not the way numbers work. Barely 2 weeks ago, the Dow peaked at 26,616. Then between last Friday and yesterday, it lost over a month of gains. It's the worst 2 days the stock market has seen in almost 2 years. However, the market is still up 26% in the last year. The typical annual growth is about 8%. Too much, too fast, perhaps. One director at the brokerage firm said, "This is the first time in a while I'd say it feels like borderline panic type selling. We haven't seen something like this since the Brexit vote." But a director at a different firm said, "The markets are just taking a bit of a breather, which I'd argue is somewhat healthy." Yes, things like this actually slow down a melt up. You don't want money just to keep piling in and piling in faster and faster and faster and faster. That's dangerous. So is this a snowball or is this just Really nothing. Is it a snowball that's going to lead to an avalanche or a snowball that's going to be made into a snowman? Some bond investors are spooked about there being more inflation on the horizon than they originally forecasted. In its effort to slow down inflation, the Federal Reserve has caused a lot of problems in the past when it becomes overly jumpy and tweaks interest rates too much. Investors got nervous that the Fed might do this and do their usual tinkering and make things worse yesterday. A lot of this over the past couple of days is psychology. The market has gone so high, people are worried that it doesn't make sense for stocks and bonds to stay at the level that they are, so they're tapping the brakes. But what happens if the brakes are out and we're headed downhill? That's possible because the last hour of trading yesterday was a combination of AI and humans. Humans can tap the brakes. Once it breaks barriers, however, and the stock market is controlled by AI, there's nobody stepping in saying, wait, this is panic selling, don't. That's why it dropped, 500 points in just a couple of minutes. The government is also borrowing more money than ever. Retirement funds are in crisis. You couple these conditions with the volatility in Europe and add on the immigration issue over in Europe and here. And the world seems to be on the verge of a massive reset. However, I don't think this is it. Not yet. I believe this is just a correction. But here's the super good news for you. I'm always wrong on timing.
It's Tuesday, February 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Now, I read something really interesting today, the psychology of loss aversion. And it explains why so many people, for instance, just a few years ago, you would talk about a stock market like this and we could have a reasonable conversation, except with people on the left, because they would just go haywire and they would say, that's crazy. There's nothing to it. We could have a reasonable conversation and say, look, it's you know, just look at what we're spending. We're borrowing $1 trillion in the next 12 months as a country, and we're putting a $1.4 trillion stimulus package together. We're spending money like crazy. That's not good. It's not healthy. Our debt is already at $22 trillion. And yet, our side is suddenly fine with a $1.3 trillion stimulus package.
You keep lowering it. I mean, the quote from the speech was at least 1.5 trillion, and we've heard at least up to 1.7. So that seems to be the general range for the target of this thing. And you know, look, we've always said as conservatives, we want lower taxes. In conjunction with lower taxes, we want lower spending, and we have to watch that. I mean, you know, look, all the gains that have happened, you know, from the economy are at risk if you start spending money like Democrats. And we all know that. That's something every conservative knows. You don't spend money like that. We had an introduction of about $3 trillion of new spending in the great speech from, you know, from the president the other day. And that's just, you know, one way to go. But combined to what we're talking about with the economy, and you talked about this, if you want to go back and listen to it, it's on the podcast today. But if you listen to the breakdown of that, one of the important things is you can't just spend forever. It can really, you know, put at risk the gains in the economy and the positive effects of the tax cuts. We like the tax cuts. The tax cuts are great, and the tax cuts are having positive impact. But what's going to happen to our deficit if we combine the tax cuts with new spending? Because that's what Democrats want to do, is they want to tax and spend, right? They've always said that this is a tax and spend party. They want to get more money from you so they can spend more. And we're the other side. We want to get less money from you, and we want to spend less. We want to shrink government. Well, this combination of getting less money from the people and spending multiple trillions of dollars in extra finances is going to be a major problem.
So here's the real problem. Here's why the Dow went down, and I'm going to touch on this real quickly. I'm going to really lay this out on the chalkboard tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. But let me just quickly do this. Your wages are going up. That's a good thing. You're getting more tax dollars that you are not sending to Washington. That's a good thing. You're going to spend it. That's going to cause inflation. That's not a good thing. The Fed is going to raise interest rates. In some ways, it's a good thing. Economically, that needs to be done. For you, it's not a good thing. For companies, it's not a good thing. That's normal. What's different this time is all of that is happening with a $22 trillion debt and another $1 trillion of raising in the next 2 months. We need to raise, the Federal Reserve or the Treasury needs $1 trillion. That's 84% higher than last year. They need to raise that. Well, if your stocks are volatile and your interest rates are down, you're going to need something to park your money. So people are going to go to the Federal Reserve and they're going to buy Treasury bonds. And they'll buy them, and they'll buy them cheap, and the Treasury will offer high interest rates, and that's where all your money will go. All the investment that could happen is going to the federal government instead of companies. That's the problem. That's the problem. Okay, let me give you the Lawson version. So we used to be able to have these conversations, but there is something that is happening, and we have to recognize it in others and in ourselves because it's natural and normal. People protect what they have. Psychology has proven a loss aversion ratio of between 1.5 and 2.5, which means you're more likely to act in a way that protects what you currently have rather than rock the boat. So most people are adverse to losing. But it's why people become more conservative, and I don't mean it in the traditional way, conservative in what they do when things are really good, and they're hostile to anything that threatens it.
The conservative, not in a political sense, but like in an investment sense or just a lifestyle sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You anything that, for instance, if you invested in Bitcoin, you don't like anybody talking down Bitcoin. Hey, I got money in Bitcoin. Say nice things about Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? You don't spook the markets. Okay. It's why when we were talking about Barack Obama and the economy, why we believed it, because you weren't getting the money. You weren't getting the money. The big corporations and all of the special interest groups, all of the people were getting it. Some people got very, very rich. And those were the people, surprise, surprise, in Washington and New York. Those are the people who got rich. Not you. In Columbus, Ohio, you didn't get rich. They did. And when they controlled the media, they had a real problem. Don't talk it down. Don't say those things. What are you, crazy? You're a revolutionary. You hate government. Right? Remember all of that? We were saying, no, this is just not working. This is not right. Now it's working for you in the middle of the country because you're getting the tax cuts. And so right now it's working for you, but it's not working now for anybody who is in the stock market big time. It's not working for Wall Street. It's not working for the special interest groups in Washington. What did they get out of it? It's working for you. And so now those people are the ones talking it down and saying, wait, I'm not sure. Let's say, hey, this is really bad. Listen, I want you to listen to Donnie Deutsch. Listen to this and tell me if you heard any of us who were part of the Tea Party ever say anything close to this on television.
This is frightening stuff if you are an American, if you're somebody who's 80 years old and sitting at home and you've watched the greatness of this country. You should be terrified. And if you're a 12-year-old and the future is in front of you, this is terrifying. This is not time to analyze and pundit. People, we need a revolution at this point. And I'm not doing TV here and I'm not going, ooh, no, crazy Donnie. Well, this is what's going on.
We need a revolution here.
That was crazy.
He called the president a dictator. Now imagine.
I mean, I guess, you know, because I don't remember ever saying we need a revolution right now.
I was the one saying we don't want a revolution. Yeah. You never know how revolutions end. You do not want to go to the streets and have a revolution.
I mean, they would point out, you know, Ron Paul's campaign slogan had revolution in it. And you know, obviously the Tea Party is sort of named after
the revolution.
The revolution. But it was always in a is that that, that it's seems to be a revolution legitimate call for
the,
it, right?
A revolution at the ballot box. That's what we always talked about.
Yeah.
But that wasn't good enough. Now, why is that? Because it was working for them. It was fine for them. They were getting the things they wanted. And so they were just like, shut up, don't rock the boat. What are you doing? It was their natural instinct to protect it. Now, that should, the press needs to be aware of that natural instinct and stop it. It is my natural instinct as well to defend people who I don't really necessarily like or I really believe in everything, but they're furthering our goals. It is my natural instinct to do that as well, but that's not my job. It's not my job.
It's everybody's natural instinct.
Yes.
Right? You look for ways to defend what you like. It happens on the internet all the time with people's points, right? They don't want to lose the point. So they'd rather sit here and defend a position they know in their heart of hearts is not accurate, is not true, but they just don't want to give up that ground. They don't want to lose.
And they're more willing to accept, for instance, we would be more willing to accept that the country is in financial trouble under Barack Obama. Half the country would feel more comfortable saying that than they would with Donald Trump. Even though both of them are dangerous for the country's economy, right now somebody is in their car going, you damn you, Glenn Beck, what are you saying? $1 trillion of borrowing for spending of this year and a $1.5 trillion spending package. I'm being consistent. I was against $787 billion. I thought that was outrageous. This is double that size. And an 84% increase on government spending without the stimulus package. An 84% increase on loan guarantees of going out and raising. We have to raise by, I think, March, $1 trillion. That's insanity. That's insanity. And we should all be able to admit that. What we have to admit first is there are things that I don't want to because my natural instinct is things are working. Things are going well for me.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't talk that down. We're not talking things down. You should not feel that way. If you want to talk about things, you're not talking things down. You're talking reality. And when we talk reality, then and only then can we fix those things along the way to make sure that that reality doesn't turn into a nightmare. That we turn it back and say, okay, that was our reality that we were facing, but we did the hard things to make sure that we went in another direction. And that's what we're missing right now.
I think one thing we've seen with the Trump presidency specifically is when he flirts with some of these ideas that don't align with conservatism, and that has happened, when he flirts with those things and his people push back,
He changes.
He sees the light, right? And, you know, that is why I think it's important for people who do. I mean, yeah, like he's not going to listen to Glenn Beck, you know, and not going to listen to me. But he will listen to you if you look at the, if you're a big, you're one of his supporters and you're the people that fought for him in the streets and voted for him. And you say, look, it's legitimate to say, we love these tax cuts. We love a lot of the deregulation stuff he's done.
He has
a guy in the Supreme Court who's done who sees the country the way the Constitution
is written
and designed. But at the same time, you can't cut taxes and then throw. And that we're just talking about the stimulus here. Let's talk about the Family Leave Act he wants to do. There was multiple spending proposals he's proposed.
And $3 trillion in spending.
About $3 trillion of spending on the high end. It was probably about 2.5 on the low end.
Let's say he only gets a third of that.
Yeah,
that's too much.
We don't need to funnel multiple trillions of dollars from the government, from us to the government, so that they can spend it on God knows what. I mean, it's not a good idea. It wasn't a good idea with Barack Obama. Isn't a good idea with Donald Trump. And maybe if his people say, hey, we love you, but don't do this thing, he'll actually listen.
Yes. And it's important at some point. The debt is too much. You know, I know we've been saying this since, you know, it was at $10 trillion. It's at 22. It will be 23, minimum 23 by the end of this year. That's not good. At some point, it's too much and the camel's back breaks. So where is that? I don't know. We should be going as a group. We should be pushing in the opposite direction. You know, I've been reading a lot about the stock market in the last 24 hours, actually the last 36. And there are two schools of thought, that it's absolutely nothing to worry about. And oh my gosh, this is it. This is the end. I don't think it's either of those things. However, the one thing about this being the big crash, it is coming. It is coming. When? I don't know, but it is coming. Wise Americans understand the importance of emergency preparedness. And yet most of us don't prepare. And some of us are putting our heads in the sand. I'm here to tell you, it's not difficult. You just take a couple of small steps and you can make any crisis seem like just an inconvenience. Please don't wait to call. Don't wait for an emergency to strike. And then you go to the grocery store and nothing is there. Make sure this is the day that you invest in some food storage for your family. Now, I've told you for years about My Patriot Supply, and they have a special low price that is good only this week. Every person in your household can receive a two-week food kit from My Patriot Supply for only $67 each. $67, somebody in your house eats for 2 weeks. That's unheard of. You can do that with each member of the family this week only for $67 each. It's 1-800-977-0542, 800-907-0542, or you can go to preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. I'm so glad that you are here today. There is clear evidence now that Hillary Clinton colluded with Russia. This is according to Nunez. Look, can we listen to this audio, please?
Look, I think there's clear evidence of collusion, that the Democratic Party and the Hillary Clinton campaign colluded with the Russians. Okay, you don't get to hire lawyers and pretend like that didn't happen.
The very
and then
thing
it goes to what they accuse you of is what they actually were doing.
So this is really this is an interesting new piece of information, that there is a second dossier. And this dossier was being compiled by, let me see if I can get all the names here, somebody whose husband was an ambassador. Oh, sorry, brother was an ambassador. What he did is his late sister was married to Strobe Talbot, the chief authority on Russia in Bill Clinton's State Department. And Shearer heard some stuff in and got a dossier from Russia, passed it on to the State Department, to Hillary Clinton, who Clinton's people passed it on to the State Department. State Department passed it on to the DOJ. We have all of these connections to the DNC and to Hillary Clinton all passing information for an investigation that they clearly wanted to happen. Yesterday, you had the Oars passing information directly from Fusion GPS right to the DOJ through a back channel live as it was coming in. This is not right.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Trust is an important thing. It's something that we do a lot more as human beings than I think most people realize. I mean, you drive down the road and there's a little yellow line between a car coming at you at 50 miles an hour, and you're on your side of the road and they're on their side of the road, and we just trust that they'll stay on their side of the road. Their self-interest will do it, whatever it is. We don't die most of the time when we're driving, and this is a positive thing. It's hard, though, to find people you can trust when it comes to really complicated transactions like real estate. I mean, what do you do? You know, you're talking about your biggest investment in your entire life, and you're trusting this to someone because you don't understand what any of those forms mean. I never do. No one does. You don't even, half the people don't even read them. You need someone who can walk you through a big transaction like buying or selling a home and make sure they're people that you can trust, that have been screened, that aren't just some random person you're looking up in the phone book. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is a company that Glenn actually started because he was trying to sell his house and had some issues. And basically what they do at realestateagentsitrust.com, it's a network of 1,200 agents. And Glenn and his team have gone through and
and kind of gone through and found the best ones in each area. And you go and you put in your address and you put in your area where you are and you find an agent you can trust. It's your biggest investment. You need to take it seriously. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Give it a shot. realestateagentsitrust.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to play What If. Pat Grage is joining us. I want to play What If for a second. Now, here is the plot line, okay? Listen to the plot line. A possibly corrupted FBI director, biased agents manipulating investigations, partisan moles in the Justice Department, the overall threat of a hostile foreign intelligence service that is feeding things. This would be a good movie, right? But this is what's happening right now. Now, let me play What If. Right now, half the country doesn't see a problem with this. Let me play What If here. Imagine if this was 2007 and everything that I have just described was happening in 2007. And now Barack Obama is in the office and it is found out that the FBI director might have been corrupt. There were biased agents who were doing everything they could to stop him. They were in bed with a foreign government. They were going to a FISA court and not telling them that it was all funded by, you know, the John McCain campaign. Imagine that. Imagine what would be said about Bush. Imagine what would be said about John McCain. There's not a single liberal on the planet that would be okay with that. None of them. If indeed what happened was all of a sudden, there's a photograph with Obama and Louis Farrakhan. We know that exists because it was just released, but the left hid it. The left press hid it. They just released it a couple of weeks ago. And they did it because they knew what would happen. So imagine if that photo would have been leaked, just the photo, leaked by Russia to John McCain, who then had a surrogate go to a newspaper, go to Drudge Report, and publish that. Can you imagine what they would have said? If the Drudge Report, which they did, would have released from a secret dossier that Obama had ties to domestic terrorist Bill Ayers, if there was a coordinated action from the McCain campaign funneling all this information about Bill Ayers and about Jeremiah Wright and all of these things, all of the tapes, all of the pictures, feeding that to the FBI, the FBI then started to wiretap Obama to find out about all of his connections. And all of this was just dumped out into the press. What do you think, if you were on the left, what do you think you'd be saying right now? And if you'd be saying it then, why aren't you saying it now? Because here's the one thing I learned. If you don't correct the problem, I said to you while I was on Fox, if you were a liberal, I said all the time, you've got to stop this or the next guy is, you think, what do you think the next guy's going to do? If this isn't caught, what do you think happens in the future? This isn't going to be good. We need to stop it. And those of you on the right, we have to stop this. We have to investigate and find out everything that's going on, mainly with Russia and the FBI and the DOJ and the FISA court. We have to know that. If that entangles Donald Trump or entangles Hillary Clinton, the chips fall where they may. But we must do it, because if we don't clean it up, what do you think the next Democrat administration will do? Worse. It has to be fixed. Pat Gray, welcome to the program.
Kind of have to have the mainstream media cooperating with that, though, and they're not going to.
No.
They're just not. They don't care. All they care about is trying to find some link between Trump and Russians. That's the only thing that concerns them.
I can't watch the news anymore.
I know.
I can't watch left news. I can't watch the right news, because they're both telling me bogus stories. They're telling me fantasies, both sides. This isn't about Donald Trump, and it's not about Hillary Clinton. It is about the FBI, DOJ, and Russia, and the FISA court. My gosh, if this is the way the FISA court works, we should all be terrified.
And how about this is the way the FBI works?
Yes.
We should all be terrified.
In a way, that's kind of the nicer explanation here. Like, hey, they weren't just targeting Donald Trump. They're just bad all the time. Yeah. And that's actually in a lot of ways scarier, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because you look at the FISA thing and how they left out this detail and they omitted this that they should have put in there. Maybe that's what they're doing all the time, right? Like, I mean, libertarians have been complaining about that forever.
Oh, I think they probably are.
Right. They all get approved. All the FISA applications get approved. Like, it's like 99.7% of them. And the reason is because they'll put anything in there to get it. And they're not really looking at trying to stop them.
It's shocking to me that the libertarian movement is not just growing out of control right now. Shocking to me. Somebody in the Libertarian Party just doesn't get it. I don't know what it is, but they don't get it.
And there's no libertarian to really get behind.
No.
Who would lead that charge?
Last time that when they ran, they ran Gary Johnson, who's
not a libertarian.
No.
He didn't it's closer have, to socialism right. than libertarianism.
He was a big government guy. It didn't make any sense. Uh-huh. They're blowing it. That is the answer. Libertarianism is the answer. If libertarian means constitutional, if the libertarian movement is about that Bill of Rights and the Constitution, what are the powers? What are not the powers? Let's just do that. That's the answer. Because we all agree that one thing we unite on, if you take it out of the old-timey language of the Bill of Rights, all of us agree on that. At least 8 out of 10, we agree. So how come we can't get along?
The problem is if you need one man, one woman to lead libertarianism, then it's not libertarianism as the solution. It's just a guy who's preaching it. Like, you have people just don't connect with the concepts enough. I mean, you pull these topics, libertarian topics, and they're all very popular individually. It's just, I think when it comes to people, you know, I don't know if it's just if it affects their life, they don't want to do it, or it feels weird. I mean, Libertarian Party certainly doesn't help itself with some of the candidates it runs because, you know, they can be a tad quirky at times.
You know, I'll take the quirky ones as long as they're actually libertarians.
Yeah. Gary Johnson had
nothing to do with
the Libertarian Party.
No.
At least
not
Ron Paul had something to do with libertarians.
Right. And he ran as a Republican.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the issue. I mean, that's part of it. I think part of it is, I mean, look at, you know, we heard of this all the time during the election, which was, you know, it's a binary choice. I think that's how 99% of people look at it. It's you have choice A and choice B, pick the best.
So choice A is Republican or Democrat. What's choice B?
Right.
is that really what it is? Yeah. It's what it is. I mean, come on. We're borrowing $1 trillion. We have a $1.5 trillion suggested stimulus package. A Republican president said we'll do $3 trillion in spending in his State of the Union address while we cut taxes. What the hell? I don't need a Democrat.
Well, I mean,
I got that party.
You get the cut taxes, I guess, right? I mean, there's certainly advantages, and there's been some good policy developments that we've talked about at length. But, you know, it's for another movement to actually develop, you'd have to have people connecting with the fundamental principles, and I don't think that's what they do. I think at this point, it's like, you know, it was Eagles versus Patriots. I didn't care how the Eagle. I don't care if they ran it or they threw it. I didn't care if they won it with a defensive struggle or a shootout. I just wanted them to win.
Yeah,
and a shootout.
Yes, and it's a sports term.
Oh, it's a sports term. I was saying, well, it's the Eagles. I thought maybe there was a chance.
Well, you know, knowing Philly, occasionally things are shot at people.
Yes,
okay?
It's not the players. It's all of the fans in the stands that are shooting the other
players.
Don't
demean our culture.
All right. Oh, sorry.
And it's fine in sports to do it that way.
Yeah.
To have your favorite team and come what may, no matter what, you root for them.
Because you don't want to be a fair weather fan. You're a fan for other reasons, not because they're winning. You're a fan because they mean something to you.
But politics and just rooting for the Republicans is lunacy because they don't stand for anything anymore. Just like the Democrats, how many Democrats understand that the Democrat Party is closer to the Communist Party than the principles of JFK?
Yeah.
Are there any Democrats who understand that? Not really. They just continue to vote for their team.
How many Democrats understand that the Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid of the 1990s were far to the right of the Republicans on immigration today?
Oh, my.
More conservative than almost every Republican today.
We just played a montage
like Chuck Schumer
last week of Democrats talking about immigration in the early 2000s and the mid-90s. And it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
How have you?
You don't have it. You don't even have it, except for like Ted Cruz. You don't have anybody who's like that strong in immigration now.
No, no, no.
Listen to
nobody.
Listen to the Harry Reid, you know, mid 1990s clips where he sounds like Ron Paul to audit the Fed.
Yeah,
yeah.
Every year he introduced a bill. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Every year, The same people with completely different views. Happened? How all of a sudden the Democrats are to tell us they're tough on Russia?
Yeah.
Is that the world we live in? That the Democrats are tough on Russia?
May I say, I found out from my children on Sunday, the world we live in is the world where Justin Timberlake is the king of pop.
Now, see?
That is the world we live
You've
in.
You've been That's avoiding that huge topic because yesterday you greatly misled me by telling me that Justin Timberlake's the king of pop.
Please tell me he's not.
He's not.
Oh, thank
goodness.
He's
not the king of pop.
My kids, we sat there and I'm like, Justin, I can't believe Justin Timberlake. And they're like, Dad, he's our generation's king of pop. And I'm like, he is not. Yes, he is.
I mean, he's had a heck of a run.
Yeah, he's good.
They said that they actually labeled him the king of pop.
The king of pop. Yeah. Oh, you're saying that like
he's the Michael,
he's
Jackson.
Michael Jackson's label now.
Yeah, he got Michael Jackson's label.
Do you believe
label.
That?
I wouldn't believe. I mean, he's
right.
He's, I mean, that's he's too certainly far. An A-lister.
Yes,
right? For sure.
He's a big star.
Yes,
but there's apparently bigger. The BBC judged who's the king or queen of pop by streams. Combination of all YouTube and Spotify plays, followers, they combined Twitter and Instagram and all that, Facebook, week spent at number one, album sales globally, and personal fortune. Those are all pretty good criteria to
Queen
judge.
Queen of pop would be Beyonce.
Tay-Tay.
Well, at number 10, they kind of jammed them all in together.
Okay, all right, okay.
So this is sort of gender neutral.
Oh, okay, all right. Thank goodness.
At number 10. See, Ed Sheeran didn't even make the list. Neither did Lady Gaga or Kanye. So at number 10, Justin Timberlake.
Okay. It's
still top 10.
He's still top 10. Mm-hmm. At number 9, Drake.
Wow.
It shows you how bad today's music is. Drake? What? We had Elton John and Billy Joel and Michael Jackson. Drake? You're going to throw Drake at me?
Every time I hear
Oh, that is a kind of a duck, isn't it?
I was going to go cake. Isn't it Drake's Cakes? Isn't that like a hostess-like product?
I'm staying quiet because I don't know Drake at all.
At number 8.
I believe the Canadian rapper.
Okay.
Which is obviously the source of all rap.
At number 8, and I like this guy, but I don't know how long he's been big or if he really qualifies, but he's number 8 on the list, Bruno Mars.
Yeah,
He's good. He's done a Super Bowl halftime, so
I wouldn't consider him. I wouldn't have considered him the king of pop either.
No,
but he's really good.
Adele is number 6.
I would put in
Adele. But again, like, you really like her, right?
Yeah, and I would put her in the close of that category of queen of pop.
Many
of
these artists have had a 3 to 5 year period of being arguably the king of pop, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, the part of the Michael Jackson thing was it was a long lasting
power.
It was king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley. When he died in 1979 on a career that started in the 50s, radio shut off. Do you remember that? I mean, it was a huge 3-day deal. That's a king of rock and roll. A king of pop is Michael Jackson, who started when he was 8 and was making number one records until the day he died. That's a king of pop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially Drake is not in that.
But Drake is huge. I mean, I know this is not his target demo.
A king of pop has to have generational spread.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think so too.
Eminem's at number 6, which blows me away too.
Yeah, he's been around a long time.
He's weathered a long time. I mean, he's supposed to be
pop.
It's not even a pop artist, I don't think.
At number 4, tied for number 4, Beyonce and Katy Perry.
Okay. I mean, again,
they're
like,
both pretty big.
Okay. So
right?
then it's got to be the other one I was thinking of is the country singer that said, you know, in front of Elton John, I have this theory that love songs are really just poems set to music. Who was it that said that?
I don't know. It was at the
100 most influential people. She was performing. Elton John was in the front row. I was sitting right behind. It's 100. It's an audience of 100 and their guests. Okay, 100 most influential. Right. Bill Clinton was there, and she gets up, she performs, and she Elton John. I think Elton John wanted to kill himself. No crap. Really?
Third, Taylor Swift.
Ah, that's her. That was my guess.
That's her. Taylor Swift.
That's what I said. Tay-Tay.
I don't know how Rihanna goes Rihanna, ahead yeah. of wow. Rihanna ahead of Taylor
lots
Swift.
Lots of hits. Lots of big
and
songs.
And at number one, the number one, the king of pop, according to the BBC, Justin Bieber. That's actually worse, isn't it?
I felt
worse.
Better.
I know. I felt better yesterday.
You took the Justin and you doubled down.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Thank you.
Pat Gray Unleashed is on the Blaze Radio and TV Network coming up. I'm going to be appearing here talking a little more detail on my Super Bowl trip on the program today. So please listen.
1-800-Flowers is our sponsor this half hour. Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and there's a great way to order flowers or really any gifts. They have a whole buttload of things that you can get. You can get flowers, you can get treats, you can get all kinds of stuff. Just check out their website at 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, you can get 24 multicolored roses for only $29.99. $29.99, two dozen roses, or you can upgrade to 24 red roses for only $10 more. That's a great Valentine's offer that you're just not going to find anyplace else. You can find it at 1-800-Flowers.com. Roses from 1-800-Flowers.com are picked to their peak and shipped overnight. 24 colorful roses for $29.99, or upgrade to red roses, 24, two dozen, for $10 more. All you have to do, click on the radio icon and enter the promo code Beck when you go to 1-800-Flowers.com. That's 1-800-Flowers.com. Do it today. Enter the promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Well, Stu has been in the studio, at which we keep at 65 degrees, and I believe he has finally warmed up from his Super Bowl trip.
Yes. People in Minnesota, I have a lot of respect for you. That is hard. Just going outside for 10 seconds.
You know, you don't have to do
that. Frozen to the core.
Yeah, I don't know how people live there.
It's amazing. Yeah. You got to be a different breed.
God bless you. God bless you. Welcome back, Stu. Congratulations, Eagles.
Yes.
See you tonight at 5. Don't miss it. The economy and what's coming next. Tonight at 5, only on theblaze.com/TV.
Back. Mercury.